Hey guys, Michael Tazzoni here. Welcome to day 32. Oh, it's 33 now, of CryptoLife 365. Decided to take the day off, so I've been mainly catching up on some TV shows that I've been sitting on my to watch list for many weeks now. Fair warning, this episode may be a little bit long, and I am going to be pretty honest as to what Bitcoin and the entire cryptocurrency intent or future or goal is going to be. So prepare to, I guess, go down the rabbit hole if you're not aware of any of these things. So one TV show I've been watching is called Mr. Robot. If you are not aware of it or don't know what it is, basically it goes through the life of a hacker who tries to fix the world by destroying the records of a very, very large financial institution. And the idea is that if all the records of this financial institution are wiped out, then all the loans, all wealthy people's money, all the debts, everything is wiped as a clean slate. And also the result, since this would cause all the banks to collapse as well, because this company was that big, it would wipe out all the power at the top. The whole point was that he wanted to bring down the top 1% of 1%. And I just finished season 3, which really goes into kind of the fallout of that idea. And this whole kind of episode is making me rethink, not rethink, but seriously consider the consequences of what Bitcoin is going to bring on. Really the most poignant quote to me from the whole season was around near the end, where one of the people, Mr. Price, he was the guy who, well, a bit of a spoiler, and yeah, spoiler alerts for season 3. Elliot, the main character, is feeling remorseful about having done what he did, because as the entire financial system collapsed around him, it seemed to have made things a lot worse for everybody else too, not just the ones at the top, which was kind of predictable, but it also seemed like the people whom this happened to did not have the same vision of the revolution as he did. So one of the main characters here tells Elliot this one quote. He says, "You can't force an agenda, Mr. Elderson. You have to inspire one." He's referring to the fact that Elliot forced the collapse of the system on the whole society, and society did not really accept it and came off worse off as a result. People were kind of pining for, I guess, things how they used to be. And sorry, I'm here enjoying a nice big cup of tea as I'm enjoying myself. Sorry, that was a really hot cup of tea, and I think I got my cat hair in there. Oh yeah, I got my kitty back home. Anyway, sorry about that. I'll just be sipping my hot cup of tea a little slowly as I talk about this. So where was I? So yeah, this quote that you can't force an agenda, you have to inspire one, made me think, what is Bitcoin? Is that a way to force an agenda on everybody? Or is it something that will be inspired, will inspire others? Here's the thing, there's a concept in economics called hypermonetization and hyperinflation. With Bitcoin, there was another term that was coined by a friend of mine, Daniel Kravitz. The term is hyper-Bitcoinization. In short, the way it works is, let's say Bitcoin, the currency, ends up being as useful as any other money, where you, when you go to a merchant, you can spend Bitcoin or dollars, and as a merchant, you can receive or accept Bitcoins or dollars. At that point, you have a choice. There's two currencies, they're just as useful, but one currency is growing in value, and the other currency, the US dollar or euro, is inflating and falling in value. So, since you know you're not going to be holding, I mean, you're not going to be spending the currency right away, you're going to be holding it for a little while, you obviously have a preference for taking the currency that grows, which would be Bitcoin. It would also be the currency that you actually are able to hold possession of yourself and have full control of, and can send to others without any restrictions or bank holidays. So what happens in such a scenario is that people will start to prefer paying with and accepting Bitcoin. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if merchants actually started to give discounts if you were to buy from them using Bitcoin. This, in effect, would make Bitcoin use grow because it would create a self-feeding loop. And also, at this point, like, you're a person who has both Bitcoin and dollars, and one of your money is losing value and the other one is gaining value, but they're both just as useful. So what do? You obviously, you would get rid of the money that's losing value. So you would go on the market, you would sell your dollars, and you would buy more Bitcoin. As a result of this market action, you will actually increase the value of Bitcoin because you're increasing the supply of Bitcoin and decrease the value of... you're increasing the demand of Bitcoin, I'm sorry. And you'll be decreasing the value of the dollar because you're increasing the supply of dollars available. So by you doing this, you will push price of Bitcoin up and push the price of dollars down. Now, everybody else who has both of these will also likewise look at the market and see, Bitcoin is going up even faster now because you pushed up the price, and my dollars are going down even faster now because you pushed down the price. So they will also go out and do the same thing. This action being taken by everybody will create a self-feeding loop where everybody will start trying to dump all their dollars and try to put money into Bitcoin as fast as they possibly can, because as the faster they do it, the faster they actually push it, and the faster they need to do it. So as a result, this is called a speculative attack. If you want to read more about it, you can actually research George Soros, because that's actually how he made his money, by doing a speculative attack against the British pound. For hyper-Bitcoinization and speculative attack, I suggest you Google search those terms, specifically hyper-Bitcoinization and Bitcoin speculative attack, and you'll read two articles. As I mentioned, one of them is written by my friend Daniel Kravitz that described this whole concept in a pretty good way. And this whole attack, the whole process will typically probably happen in the span of maybe a month and a half or two. It's extremely quick. But effectively, what you're going to see is Bitcoin is going to go up in value, maybe slow, maybe fast, and adoption will keep growing. And then at some point, pretty much without anybody getting a warning, it will just snap. The speculative attack will happen, Bitcoin will take over, and the other currency will all of a sudden completely collapse and become useless because nobody's going to want to use it. Its value will keep getting suppressed, and one currency will effectively replace the other. Now, unlike hyperinflation, where, like in Venezuela or Zimbabwe or even my home country of Ukraine and Soviet Union, people have one currency and that's all they have. And then when hyperinflation hits, they see their income not really keep up with it, so they are earning less in real value terms, and their savings are completely wiped out because all their value of the savings in their regular currency is hyperinflated away. And at the same time, the prices of everything else in the market skyrocket. In that kind of a situation, everybody is harmed pretty significantly. Everybody has to run out and spend all their money on anything they can buy. Like when USSR fell apart and the ruble crashed, people were running out to buy shovels, matches, and anything else they can get their hands on, just because it's something that's not going to lose value, unlike the ruble, and something that they can trade for with later. So that scenario is just terrible for everybody. However, with hyper-Bitcoinization, it's a little bit different in that... It's a little different in that instead of the currency that everybody uses collapses, you just have a new currency that is better coming in and replacing and wiping out all the old currency. Which sounds great, because now, well, you have a much, much cleaner, faster, more efficient currency that is makes everybody better off as the economy grows, because that's what deflation and deflationary currencies do. However, obviously there's an issue of there's going to be people who do not get into Bitcoin right away. There'll be stragglers who hold out thinking Bitcoin is still a scam, or it's tulips, or they don't trust it, or they simply don't know how to use it. Those people who still stay with the old currencies will be hurt the most. Well, no, they will not be hurt the most, but they will be hurt. So, I mean, really, lesson is this is coming. This is not something that's under any kind of question. This is definitely on the horizon. Inevitable, effectively. So, if you want to protect yourself, do have at least something in Bitcoin, because you don't want to be the last one to hold whatever currency that is going to be replacing. The other thing about hyper-Bitcoinization, though, is that we have a whole lot of contracts written in US dollars. A lot of those contracts are in fixed interest terms. So, you know how you guys might have a mortgage, or you might have a loan with a fixed interest, like your student loan might be fixed interest. And the idea is that, let's say you have a mortgage for $100,000, let's say $200,000, because I just remember the numbers a little better this way. So you have a mortgage for $200,000, and you want to pay for 30 years at, let's say, 5% or so. What happens is that your actual payments for the loan will be fixed for the entire 30 years. So the first year you're going to be paying, I don't know, maybe $750, $800 every month. And then the next month you're going to pay $800, the next month $800, the next month $800. And it's going to be the same amount throughout the entire 30 years. And $800 right now is something that, well, you can imagine what you can do with $800. However, with our inflation of what is supposed to be around 3%, 30 years from now, that $800 will actually feel more like a little less than $400, because the value of the money being paid shrank a lot. So, and that's kind of the idea. I mean, that's not intentional, but that's what inflation does. Your payments are front-loaded, and then the remainder of them are paid off to at the very end, where you're actually, it's much easier for you to pay then, because hopefully by 30 years your salary would have at least doubled, and the value of those $800 would have halved. For the bank, they don't really care that your money is now worth half, because likewise they also got most of their payments front-loaded. They knew what the inflation was going to be. If it's 3%, then they would have charged you more than inflation. Could be 3.5%, 4%, 5%, or 6% to pay off the loan, so they still make out on top. But now imagine if there was a hyperinflation scenario where you signed up for a loan for 30 years, and then a year down the road, money is worth 1/10 of what it was before, or let's say even 1/100. Now, all of a sudden, 2 years later, instead of making payments of $800 that actually feel like about $800, each one of your payment, it feels like $8. In fact, money is worth so much less that you can go to the bank and write out a check for the entire value of your house and just pay it off with one of your paychecks. And the bank can't do a thing about it because they have a contract, and the contract is denominated in U.S. dollars and in fixed interest terms. So if they want $200,000 from you, which to you now is because everything is down to 100, it's worth 2,000. So you write out a check for $200,000 for them. They have no choice but to accept that check because that's what the contract is written for. And now your house is free and clear. And actually, in fact, that is one of the big issues that happened during the Weimar Republic, which is pre-World War II Germany. There was hyperinflation. And during that hyperinflation, that's actually what happened with a lot of people. They were able to buy up properties, at least the people who knew what the heck was going on. Buy up properties, take advantage of hyperinflation, and end up owning all those properties outright, not really having to pay all that much to acquire them, simply because the contracts that they were written in were in money that became pretty much worthless. So this is basically what hyper-Bitcoinization is going to do to all the other contracts that are out there right now. And this isn't just contracts like mortgages or student loans. These are contracts that might be between businesses, business-to-business stuff. Like, for example, a lot of times when a business buys inventory, like when I used to work for a gummy bear company called Haribo, so what we would do is we would order gummy candies from a factory, and this order would be made with a loan, and the loan would be a 30-day term loan at a fixed interest, and then if we did not pay it after 30 days, we had a 10-day period where we actually had a slightly higher interest, and then the full loan was due. So what we would do is we would order that candy with a loan. We would ship that candy to stores. The candy would sell. We would collect the money from the candy, pay off that loan, and keep the rest for ourselves, keep the profit for the company. In that sense, we never actually had to put up any of our own money to pay the factory. The factory was willing to front load the candy to us and let us sell it on their behalf, so to speak. Now, imagine if we were in the same situation and suddenly hyper-Bitcoinization happened, where the dollars that we owed them were almost worth nothing, or they started to severely drop in value. What would happen is we would buy, let's say, $20,000 worth of candy, and by the end of the month, instead of paying them back the $20,000 plus interest, we pay them back what would be worth maybe $1,000, or maybe even less, because the value of what we actually paid them back, even though it's still $20,000, the value of it is almost nothing. What would happen to that factory is that they would not have the money to pay for operations, because obviously everybody who works there will need to have their own income increase too, because they can't get paid the same amount they were before, because the food has gone up in value quite a lot, so everybody needs to pay a lot more to eat. So as a result, that factory will not be able to continue on, because all of a sudden all the money that it expected to come in will be gone. That's just one example. Other companies, they sell products on, let's say car companies. They have, they might sell you a car for a loan that the company might finance itself. Some realty companies might finance things themselves. All these companies that have loans, most of them will very likely be in serious trouble, if not completely wiped out. Unless banks get on this whole thing like really, really quickly and figure out what the hell is going on. A lot of the banks will get wiped out too, because, well, I guess two reasons with banks. One is a lot of their income actually depends on, well, not income, not, sorry, banks is kind of a complicated thing. They do make a lot of money by moving money around, but a lot of the banks depend on their loans, because any money that you deposit in a savings account is lent back out, and banks are basically where loans come from, and they are expecting to get that money back eventually. But also because banks rely on money itself just to exist, and if all of a sudden the money that they use is gone and they're not quite completely converted to new money, Bitcoin, then they're just not going to be able to stay in business. But what will this mean to the rest of us? That's kind of the big question here. Sure, if banks go out of business or loans disappear, everybody who owns a house or everybody who owes on the bank or even with credit cards are floating interest rates. But credit card interest rates are limited to a certain highest amount too. We have laws against predatory lending, which limit the upper limit of interest rates to a certain amount, which it would be interesting to see what would happen with predatory lending loans. And these loans are actually laws. These laws are passed to prevent loan sharks from charging like 25, 30, 40% interest on short-term loans. But it would be interesting to see what happens to predatory lending laws once currency starts to hyperinflate or hyper-Bitcoinize, where the rate of inflation goes to 100% or more, even though credit cards are not allowed to charge more than, let's say, 23%. But anyway, sorry. Banks, they're going to suffer quite a bit. Every company that has loan, mainly banks, will, unless they do something to get ready, will be wiped out. Likewise, as I mentioned, a lot of businesses will get wiped out, businesses that have depended on lending in order to survive. So like the factories that I mentioned. And as a result, this will be a very, very, very traumatic impact on the economy. On the one hand, as I said, yeah, it'd be great that you now own your own house completely outright because the money that was borrowed in is worthless. On the other hand, all those people who work in the banking system, all the people who work in various companies, even just the banking system, it's they employ a lot of people. And all those people will be out of work. All those people will not be able to earn anything. There'll be a massive influx of very skilled financial people, or maybe skilled factory workers, or, well, generally higher level like white collar workers who will suddenly find themselves out of a job, and the market will be completely saturated. Probably not too different from how the market was saturated with software people back when the dot-com bubble popped, except this will be so much bigger. But the goal of this is really that those who control money, they control everything else. That's actually, if you really drill down into the basis of where authority, governments, and big institutions gain their power from, it is literally control of money. It's being able to print it, to lend it, to create it. So the idea of Bitcoin was to make banks obsolete and to take away control of money from these major institutions in the hope that if that control is taken away and given to the people directly, then the outcome will be a much better world. People will be able to make decisions on their own. They'll be able to decide how their money is spent. Right now, everybody is either forced to give up their money, or governments just print more of their money to do whatever they want. And that's a big part of why we have things like wars, for example. Wars are not profitable at all. I mean, despite what you might hear some people say, only public institutions go to war because war does not actually create wealth. It destroys wealth. If you had a choice between seizing somebody's resources even or trading with them, it's actually a lot more profitable and efficient to simply let the people who live around the resources to trade with you, because they know the area and they can work for you to extract those resources, and to just go in there, spend a whole lot of money taking them out and then training your own people on how to actually get those resources while spending even more money to protect them from the natives, so to speak. Businesses, they don't go to war, like especially corporations. Like, let's say there's two corporations, and one is really, really big, and there's a new upstart that's coming in to try to take over. Well, a corporation is not government. It's not a CEO being a president or the president of the corporation who is in charge of this massive entity that will try to go to war to defend itself. No, a corporation is a huge collection of people owning shares. It's just the stock investors. So I guess what would be glorified in movies in such a scenario is that you have this big evil corporation and a small upstart comes in, tries to disrupt it. So the way they would portray it in movies is this big corporation will come in and start to wage war against a small one. And there'd be like probably an all-out battle and whatever. But what will happen in reality is that, like, I as an investor, I don't want the corporation wasting resources fighting. I want the corporation wasting resources, well, not wasting resources, developing and competing. And if that small upstart is a real, like, a serious threat, instead of having the big corporation fight the small corporation, I'll just sell my stock in the big corporation and buy the stock in a small corporation. That's it. And all the other rational investors will simply do the same thing. If there's a serious threat from a small one, sell the big one, or at least part of it, hedge your bets. If the small one wins, you win. That's it. There's no losses here. Excuse me. With governments, it's different. Bringing it back to the original point, there's the reason we have wars in the first place. Almost all wars come down to one thing. It's an interference with trade. We invade countries because the governments of those countries are interfering with being able to obtain certain resources that they want. Or we've gone to war because certain countries imposed very high trade restrictions or tariffs. Almost every war out there in some way can be traced to a restriction on trade, a restriction on being able to move resources around. And one country might have even water, and another country might not have it, so the other country is trying to trade for it, but the first country is not willing to give it up, so the country that's desperate to get it will go to war with them because they have no choice. And as I said, war is not profitable. The hope of Bitcoin allowing people to have control of their money is that people will hopefully, well, people don't like restricting trade. They want to be able to trade for whatever they need. Even when trade is restricted by their own government, they still trade it. I mean, the war on drugs is a great example of this, where it's a war that the government is waging against its own people, and people are effectively, well, the government's losing that war because people are much more interested in trading than even following rules that are given or imposed upon them. So, sorry, long story short, the idea of Bitcoin is to give people power. And to take power away from the people at the very top. Unfortunately, because a lot of people at the very top run quite a lot of institutions that employ quite a lot of people, and in some way create some wealth, I guess you could call that. If they go down, those people go down, and the economy as a whole goes down as well, at least temporarily. The hope is that from this massive crash, we will have a much better outcome that is much more efficient, much more peaceful. But before we get there, we have to look forward to this huge collapse, I guess you can say. And coming back to Mr. Robot, the fallout of this collapse, I mean, there will be quite a lot of tragedy happening with this. There'll be people without work. There'll probably be a lot of people who will lose their lives, either to suicide from losing a lot, or likely from increases in crime and a whole bunch of other possible scenarios. And the question that comes back to is Bitcoin trying to force an agenda, or is it going to be inspiring one? Hopefully people will learn more about it. Hopefully people will learn more about the politics behind it, and hopefully people, as they understand it, will come around to understand why it's doing what it's doing. And hell, maybe even support it. But on the other hand, people are rather complacent. They like things nice and stable and smooth and easy life. And you get up in the morning, you go to work at 9, you do a bunch of tasks that you just do without really thinking about them. Then you come back, you watch TV, you have some dinner, you go to sleep, then you do the same thing again. And once in a while, you take a nice vacation if you can afford it, or you dream about buying something nice for yourself, or you waste time with video games or whatever, and you just kind of do the world routine. Same routine around the world with not much change. And that's it. It might not be a comfortable life, but it's not greatly uncomfortable. And when things start to come down, the world might, well, the world will most likely, very likely actually, lose hope for at least a while. Same as we did during the Great Depression, same as we did after 2008. Even though there will be quite a lot to look forward to, even though there's a lot of bad things will no longer be possible because they will simply not be able to be done, same as in a way that the Gutenberg press destroyed the church's ability to preach from the pulpit, because now everybody is able to look at the Bible, read the Bible, and see what it actually says instead of being manipulated by churches during the Dark Ages. Bitcoin will make it impossible for governments to print money and for the banks to control that money, because everybody will be given the same level of control as governments and banking. But before that actually happens, it's a question of whether people actually understand what's going on, whether the entire Bitcoin community, as it's growing, will be able to inspire this change, or whether this hyper-Bitcoinization will happen in a snap so suddenly that nobody knows what hit them, and the change is forced on them, and maybe even they end up rejecting it for a more centralized, more powerful government, just like when the hyperinflation in Weimar Republic happened. People snapped to wanting a much, much, much more powerful government that will have a very iron fist type control over their money. And that's actually part of the big reason that Hitler got elected. Yeah, there's actually an entire Harvard Business School article describing how hyperinflation was one of the key components of Hitler's government coming to power. So that would be kind of the worst case scenario in this case. Honestly, I don't think that that would necessarily happen with regards to Bitcoin, just because Bitcoin is already designed to replace all money out there. So there's not like, if Bitcoin succeeds, it will be because it's impossible for any government to print money. So it'd be pretty much impossible for government to print money. Just like when the Gutenberg press succeeded in distributing Bibles, it would be pretty impossible to for churches to be able to restrict who can read the Bible, because now everybody can print and read Bibles. But overall, just the whole weight of the situation of what's coming is pretty heavy. We are in this. We are obviously not giving up. This is going to be a big, 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 big change that's coming soon. And it's going to hit everybody really, really hard. And the question is, will it be worth it? Will all the destruction be worth it? Because unlike in Mr. Robot, spoiler alert, but there's no way to, well, actually in Mr. Robot, there's no way to do that too. He believes that he can reverse it. In this case, it would be not reversible. It's just a question of whether it'll be worth it. I guess in this case, it doesn't really... The question doesn't really matter, because as I said, this is inevitable. But it's just something rather heavy to consider, I guess. So the best option we have is to make sure that the Bitcoin agenda is inspired, that people understand what's going on with it, that they understand why it's being done, and that it's not just some get-rich-quick scheme. And that they understand how to handle the situation when it actually happens. Don't be the last one holding the bag. Don't write out loans for long term using fixed interest loan contracts. Like, especially if you're in real estate and you want to do a lease option for somebody for like 30 years or whatever. I don't think we have 30 years. So don't screw yourself, and keep in mind that some companies that you might be dealing with, if it's a company that's loan-based, they simply might not be able to survive. Anyway, as I said, this will be a very long one, and sorry if sorry it was, but needed to be said. So, yeah. Watch Mr. Robot if you can. Season 3. Well, first season 1, 2, and get to season 3. It's pretty good. It made me think in different ways, I guess, of what we may have to deal with regards to the fallout from this whole thing. I considered some of it, but not to the level that they'd go into. Especially that some of the people who this whole Bitcoin thing was supposed to take down, they may still be able to take advantage of it at the very top. Not quite in the same ways. At the very least, Bitcoin does force people to stay honest to a point. But yeah, there's going to be consequences coming. And if you really, really want to be involved in the space and keep building it up like I am. Just be aware that there is a bright light at the very, very end of a tunnel, but there's going to be a pretty, pretty dark tunnel on the way. Anyway, that's it for today. I'm going to probably turn in for the night because it is pretty late already. And I guess I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye.